Welcome back to Card Knock Life. It's been a little while. This is episode 50. We're going to call this season 2. Is that okay with you, Daryl?
Yeah, season 2 is good.
Season 2. We took a little hiatus there of, what, 3 or 4 months? I don't even know
how long. Yeah, 3 or 4 months, it feels like, yeah.
Made it all the way up to episode 49. A milestone was in sight, and we just got cold feet. So we took a break.
Really, I think you had a ton of school stuff that you were trying to deal with.
Really, it was summertime, so I can't even use that excuse.
marching band doesn't stop, my friend.
That's true. Yeah, we had we did have homecoming last weekend.
Oh, good.
So that's done with. This is probably the busiest time of year, but I'm still inclined to boot this thing back up because there's a lot of cool stuff to talk about.
To get back to business?
Yeah. I was itching to record today because there's all sorts of awesome stuff I've been hearing about and really wanted to kind of discuss with you. And
all right. Well, shall we talk about writing cards with boys first?
Yeah, let's talk about that. We got to cover this standard open. Before we get to it, though, let me just mention that we've got a lot of MTGO and Puka Trade related stuff to hit afterwards, as well as this thing that I'm like super excited to talk about. And I hope that, you know, this is kind of like the bulk of our cast, is this Frontier Magic, which is a brand new format. So I'm just going to tease you with that a little bit. But let's talk about, as you said, riding in cars with boys, which you are obviously referring to the Indianapolis SCG Open, correct?
Yeah, but there were... where's this card at? Why is it in the spells section? I don't like how vehicles are function on Star City Games. This is horrible. They're dudes.
Yeah, they gotta fix that. They need a cars column, don't they?
Yeah. I don't know. They need something, dude. This is awful. I was like looking for Smuggler's Copter in the creature section, and it wasn't there, and I'm like, why is it over here in the spells? Because it's a creature. All right, so I'm going to be 100% honest. I haven't opened a pack of Kaladesh. I haven't played a single pre-release. I haven't touched the cars. So I don't know exactly how they work in relation to everything, but this Smuggler's Copter card looks like a hell of a drug.
Yeah, I think that one is a pretty big impact player from day one here.
Like, I mean, I remember playing blue decks in Time Spiral Block and just being like, oh yeah, Looter Ilkhor, get you for one, and being like real excited about that. And this dude's a 3-3 flying Looter Ilkhor. Like, how is that? I mean, like, oh no, you have to tap one power of creature. Oh, okay, tap my one drop, hit you, Looter Ilkhor. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How is this a fair magic card? How is this a thing that they're like, yeah, we can let that be a thing?
Well, it's got drawbacks, and people have alluded to that. There was kind of like some really hot and cold debate on this thing before this last weekend.
What's the draw? I don't see the drawback.
Obviously, the positives are easy to see. It's 2 for a functional 3-3 flyer, which is all value, plus the looting, which is all value. And we've already underrated Jace Fringe Prodigy when that came out. That's a 2-mana looter that has all sorts of upside beside that.
We messed that up real bad. I'll admit that. That was bad.
But the drawback for this one is that on its own, it does not attack, right? An artifact sits on your table. You draw a card. Maybe it's another vehicle. Like, you can't attack. You can't animate your artifact. That's a drawback, right?
I mean,
granted, all you need to draw is a freaking Draven Inspector to get it online again.
I feel like you built your deck poorly if you can't just turn this guy on. Because, like, I feel like there's no way that your opponent can just have, like, mono kill spells. It's like, here's my question.
Yes.
Is attacking with Needle Spires better than attacking with Smuggler's Copter?
It depends what situation you're in. If they're at 4, it's better than attacking Needle Spires.
Like, in most situations, like, a 3-3 flying, like, evasion, a 3-3 evasion that loots, like, if you're both in top deck mode and you draw a land and it's not a Needle Spires, I would just like animate my Needle Spires, tap it to crew my Smuggler's Copter, and get you for 3, and discard the useless card I drew, and draw a fresh card.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, 3 damage is significant. That's a lightning bolt.
But yeah, I feel like this card is just like being a 3-3 flyer that can turn your crappy land into a lightning bolt. Like, because let's be honest, the body on Needle Spires is not that awe-inspiring. I'm not like, yeah, 2-1 first strike. Got him.
Yeah, no, it's ingenious that's in the same deck. You know, it's like the perfect body to pilot all of the things except for these
except for the Death Star. Yeah. Like, if Needle Spires was a 3-1 double strike, you'd be like, all right, activate Needle Spires, get you with the Death Star. Like,
yeah. Now, of course, we're talking about CVM's deck. He won with this white-red vehicles, but there are tons of these. This was, like, just vehicles all over the top eight. So,
I'll be 100% honest.
Yeah.
Dapala looks kind of crazy. Like,
yeah, it's insane.
How many dwarves are in this deck? I don't think it's many.
Well,
eight dwarves.
Eight plus this three Dapala.
Well, Dapala can't pump itself. It's other dwarves.
Okay, well, you asked how many dwarves are in the deck. The answer is...
Hey, I did ask you to be a smartass. Plus, it pumps the 11 or the 9 vehicles, and it lets you find all dwarves and vehicles among the top X of your library.
Yeah,
that's pretty reasonable.
Which is relevant because you can grab extra copies of Dapala. Even you can grab extra
Dapalas. You can grab veteran. Well, you can't because there's two. Yeah, it's a legend. But you can grab your veteran motorist. Which, holy crap. A 3-1 Scry 2 is insane. Like,
yeah, oh, that's nuts.
That's bananas.
These two cards are prime examples of power creep in this game. Dapala is 3 for 3-3. There was a time where that was good on its own. Dapala is 3 for 3-3. Lord, there was a time for that where that was good on its own.
I definitely just read Dapala as a 2-2. Like, I was Dapala is a 2-2. No big deal. The thing being able to cancel... To captain the Death Star is a little ridiculous. That's sorry. For those of you that don't understand what I'm calling Death Star, it's the Sky Sovereign Council flagship.
Yeah,
it's
just for Titan.
Yeah, it's just a gigantic floating city. Like, it's the Death Star. But like, being able for that thing to pilot all of the vehicles is a little dumb. Like, that's
okay. That's... So let's wrap this vehicle conversation up a little bit. I think this is a flavor win. This is like straight up steampunk.deck. As far as weekend one of a new standard goes, this set has made a huge impact on the new standard.
Four red white vehicles decks in the top eight.
Well, I mean, look at this first deck. It's 50%. No, it's even more like non-land cards. It's like 60 to 70% new, you know, it's a Kaladesh.
2, 4. Oh, let me look at Chris's deck. C9, 11, 8 is 19, 21, 23 out of 36. Yeah, it's almost 60%. Yeah.
And the good news is there, it doesn't rely on like a flagship. That's an awful metaphor for this situation. Mythic card.
I mean, it doesn't rely on Sky Sovereign Council flagship, but Sky Sovereign Council flagship is certainly in there.
But you know what I'm saying? Like any, like if this was a new standard and these four smugglers copters were all mythic, this deck, the value of this deck would be just insane, right? But I think this is reasonable. I think this is a standard deck that can maintain like a really reasonable price tag, you know, to get players involved in the format, with the exception of the four Gideon and the sideboard. And who knows if long term that's, you know, going to be the play.
Well, there were a couple of white red aggro decks that didn't play Gideon in the sideboard. There were two straight up vehicles decks that would look like they were pretty much the same.
Okay.
There was red white humans and red white aggro. So the red white humans deck was, this was really interesting. It was four Hanwar Garrison. So like the guy that melds with the battlements to make the weird Eldrazi thing. Inventor's Apprentice, four Thalia's Lieutenant, fourth Raven Inspector, three Pia, two Thalia Heretic to power. And this had two Gideons in it and some lands. And then Smuggler's Copter, Fruit Cruiser, Harness Lightning Deck, and Stone. And then the sideboard, let me look at it. Selfless Spirit, Always Watching, Stasis Thing. What the heck is this card? Oh, that's cute. Repel the Abominable.
What is that?
Prevent all damage that would be dealt by all non-human sources this turn.
Wow.
So yeah, it just says, all right, we're going to do human combat and all your vehicles don't do anything. A ride down...
Yeah, it's
a Savage Alliance. What does this card do?
Long story short, it's a lot of red white, right?
Yeah, which so is kind there of there is a flagship mythic in this one though. There's a couple.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, let me see fair the enough. Other.
Basically the reports I was hearing from the tournament was that there was a lot of this red black deck. Like that was overwhelmingly the biggest deck on day two. This red black aggro, like in fourth place, Jacob Hagen.
Let's take a look at this.
Turns out that there's only one in the top eight, but this is a deck. This is like a, basically an artifact aggro deck. PNLR, Bombat Courier, Scrap Ape Scrounger, and Mentor's Apprentice. And Mentor's Apprentice, I heard him called Nerd Ape on camera by, I think, Cedric. I thought that was pretty funny, but basically one for a 2/3 red creature. Human.
If you have a thing, an artifact.
But it's all the same you strategy.
You just go Inventor's Apprentice into Smuggler's Copter?
Yes. Yeah.
Oofah. That's...
I mean, look at this one too, though, Daryl. Like, different creature base slightly, but still it's just based on Fleet Wheel, Cruiser, Smuggler's Copter. You know, it's like, is this going to be our format? Is it solved already?
Dude, I think we're going to be plenty to do. I think we're going to be riding in cars with boys for a while. It's going to be a thing, I think.
So what does this call for next week, though? Are we going to see, like, a control strategy arise? I mean there's going to be a ton of vehicle strategies showing up next weekend, right?
So theoretically, doesn't this say that you could play, like, mainboard shatters or, like, mainboard fragmentize? Because, like, if there's so many Smuggler's Copters and so many, like, Gear Hulks and Fleet Wheel Cruisers and Death Stars, like, don't you just play, like, main deck shatter, like whatever the actual just destroy target artifact no limitation is, and you'd be like, all right, that thing is dead.
Sure.
Kill Smuggler's Copter. Like, because if Smuggler's Copter is just like that good, like,
yeah,
I feel like we should just be trying to kill them all with fire, but I don't know.
Yeah, you're certainly going to see more of that, right? Probably even main deck, because every deck's got some kind of artifact strategy in it. Even this Grixis Emerge deck has, like, these perpetual times pieces.
It's like, got hold Smuggler's on. Copter have, in it. I have to figure this out real quick.
This is a second place deck.
Grixis Emerge? All right, let's take a look at it. That thing's pretty good. Make some zombies.
Basically, the incentive to play Grixis versus Teemer is... it's got Crypt Breaker, it's got Haunted Dead.
Prize the Amalgam,
yeah.
Prize the Amalgam. Because you just, like, you buy back the Scrap Heap Scrounger by exiling, like, your Insolent Neonate, and then you get back Prize the Amalgam, and then you sack your Prize the Amalgam to Elder Deep Fiend, to Deep Fiend them for 4. What the hell is Perpetual Time Piece, dude? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be 100% honest. This thing... Never mind. 0% honest. This thing cannot be an Elixir of Immortality in this format. Copter, Cozy Elixir Turn, Cathartic Fiend. Yeah, this looks like a deck.
Yeah, I mean, Elder Deep Fiend is a good strategy against the vehicle strategy. Like, tap down the permanents, right? There's not a lot they can do with that. If they got to commit 2 permanents to animate a vehicle, you know, you're going to be popping out of 5-6. And pretty consistently on early turns, too, because of the Haunted Dead... reanimate, you know, maybe grab a Prize Amalgam or something. You can you can consistently emerge just about any time you want to. I mean, clearly that's the plan here.
Yeah, I'm doing some researching here about what main deck shatters are playable in this format.
Okay.
That's not playable. It's looking like it's just fragmentized. It's just horrible. Because natural state is a thing, but it doesn't kill the 4 mana 5/3. Root out, no good. Wow, this is miserable.
Fragmentize again is the 1 mana for destroyed target artifact 4 or less, right? Yeah.
Artifact or enchantment.
Oh, okay, artifact or enchantment. I don't know if the enchantment's relevant in standard right now, is it?
Vessel of Nascency is a card that exists.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, you might want to kill that to slow down those ones.
Yeah, it's early turn actually. 1. That's an instant. Yes, the fragmentize. Oh, it is. Okay.
None of these artifact and enchantment destruction cards are good.
Yeah,
they're all bad. Like, they're all very bad. Like, fragmentize is the best. If it was an instant, it would be insane. You could play Mockery of Nature, but that's an 8 mana emerge guy. If it was like a 5 mana for the emerge, like, okay, I'd buy.
Hey, Fleet Wheel Cruiser is about $1.99 right now, $2.
I'd buy.
What do you think? Don't look right now, but Smuggler's Copter is a rare. What do you think that is after weekend 1?
$15.
Yeah, do you know that already?
No, I had okay, no clue.
Yeah, it's $15. It's up to $15. Now, that's a rare. It's certainly not going to stay $15. Well, but right now, with the intense demand,
that's sort of the price that those old rares used to be at that were played a bunch.
Uh-huh.
It was like, you know, when all the rares were just rare, that was sort of the price.
Hangerback was once a $15 rare, but that's in a set that's certainly not going to be opened as much as this one, where, you know, people are predicting this is going to be the most open set of all time. It's got the expeditions to drive down the price. I don't see why this isn't like a, you know, like $40, $50 standard deck down the line. What's the Sky Sovereign?
Sky Sovereign, I don't think that would be like $10.
Okay, it was $5 at the beginning of the weekend. You can get it for like $7. Okay. And the decks run like two of them, you know? So I'm not upset about this. I think it's kind of lame that
you get hosed by in this format are, like, if you're trying to play these decks, are like Liliana and Emrakul, like if you want to play those decks.
Right. And, you know, there was like no Emrakul. There was no Chandra, Fire of Kaladesh. There was one in the sideboard of this red deck. There's like a red aggro deck, but I haven't dug in too much to the others. But
there were like two in the two sideboards of like the non-vehicles decks.
Oh yeah, okay,
yeah. But like, yeah, this. I mean, like, even looking at the green black delirium list, the only super duper expensive card it's playing is Liliana. Unless I forget the price of all these cards, and none of them are that expensive.
Yeah, so we could talk about this all day. I think we got to move on, but let me just draw your attention to one more quick one that I thought was pretty sweet. Besides these vehicle strategies, we saw the emerge strategies, but there's also an Aetherworks Marvel thing going on here, and it's a 25th place Teamer Aetherworks. It's running. It's like I said, not a whole lot of Emrakul. This one's got 8.
I'm interested.
Eldrazi.
So, I'm just scrolling now.
Yeah, get there. 25, Daniel Weiser.
I opened that one, but I'm okay. Like,
so basically, this is the old, like, play the puzzle knot and get a shit ton of energy to power out your Aetherworks Marvel. And that's the one that looks at the top six cards of your library. Stuff. Yes, they do. And puts that Emrakul or Ruben in play.
Glass Blower's Puzzle Knot Scries 2.
Yeah, I mean, we're just all into that plan right now, clearly. Like, Cathartic Reunion to dig for it, you know?
Oh, I didn't know Aetherworks Marvel was legendary, and that makes me sad. Because that's a really sweet idea where you just put a bunch of them in play and just start killing your making tokens and killing them. But since it's legendary, you can't get, like, a bazillion energy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
One of the play.
Well, you don't even need to do that, because look at Wood Reaver's Puzzle Knot. 2 mana, you get 3 energy when it comes into play. Then you sacrifice it, you get the last 3 you need.
And then you get an energy for sacrificing it, and then 3 energy for sacrificing it. Right.
And then why not run a Harness Lightning in there when you can do like 12 damage to a creature?
I mean, do you even really use the Harness Lightning that often? You're just like,
probably discard use it a card, for the energy.
Like, discard a card, make 3 energy? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's basically Dark Ritual or Cabal Ritual before Threshold. Like.
Well, that's like the way to instant speed, you know, end of their turn. Like, instant speed, get your 3 last energy and poop out an Emrakul.
That's what I'm saying. You just, like, use it as, like, Cabal Ritual without Threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Okay, Alien Trazi, 10 out of 10 for him.
Okay, all right. Let's look really quick here. Just a glimpse at the Modern Classic, because there was a little bit of
I talk about Alien Trazi before we go on?
Oh, yes, in Standard?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Band Control. 2 Filigree Familiar, which is like the weird dog thing that gives you, like, life and draws your cards.
The kitchen things.
Yeah. 4 Spellcaller, 3 Sylvan Advocate, 2 Tyler's Tracker, an Emrakul and Ishkana, 2 Gideon, 2 Nissa Vital Force, 4 Tamiyo Field Researcher, some various lands, Stasis Snare, Blessed Alliance, Oath of Jace, Descend Upon the Sinful, Fumigate, Traverse the Uvenwald, and then, like, I don't even know what to call this sideboard. Random.
This is let's throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
It's literally, like, how about a Vampire Nighthawk creature? That's Aerial Responder. Yeah. How about a Tireless Tracker? How about a...
Hey, he's got Natural State. That's it. That's artifact removal. Instant
speed.
Yeah,
but it only kills 3 or less. So
it doesn't get the.
You can't kill the big. You can't kill the big cars. Yeah. Ongoing investigation. I don't know how. I don't know how he got to this card. Quarantine Field. Ceremonious Rejection. Natural State. Negate. Summary Dismissal. Bruta. Gisela. Gideon. Fumigate. What? I just.
Yeah, it's I love the Gisella package in there.
This deck's probably great. Like, it's probably just hilarious and fantastic to play. But just, like, the most random cards in this deck in the history of ever.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I didn't see any of the decks I wanted to play. Mostly because I saw a Versus video that Todd Anderson played in deck. And I just thought it was super cool. It's probably just the most inconsistent thing ever. It probably just, like, dies to the vehicle strategy really hard.
Uh-huh.
But it looked really cool. And it was, like, use, like, Cathartic Reunion and Tormenting Voice to, like, load your graveyard up with Gear Hulks. And then cast Ever After to put just a bunch of Gear Hulks into play.
Yeah.
And so you just, like, red, white, black Gear Hulk. You're like, all right, kill your stuff. Gain some lives. Would you like me to draw a bunch of cards?
There wasn't a ton of Gearhulk. I'm surprised that we didn't see any Cataclysmic, which I think is maybe a good counter action to the vehicle decks, because
I don't really think so. Because like they
choose vehicle,
and they keep a creature to crew the vehicle.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, like I don't think that's a great counter to.
You know what there is, though? Okay, so I'm looking at this here. We're talking about cards to counteract the artifact strategy. Aether Meltdown, have you seen that one?
Nope. What does that do?
It's one in a blue for an enchantment aura with flash. Enchant creature or vehicle. Enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy. Enchanted permanent gets -4/-0. So while it doesn't stop the looting, it will shut down.
Well, it does stop the looting. It does stop the looting. Because if it doesn't deal damage,
it does when it attacks.
No, it's when it deals damage.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's perfect for that, then. It turns a Fleet Wheel into a one-power creature, too.
I think it's when it's when it attacks or blocks. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, that's insane. It or blocks.
God, that's so lame. I thought it was when it dealt damage, which would make that thing so great, but it's not.
I mean, if it's a 0/3, that's okay, too.
I just feel so defeated. Like, as a control player, how do you beat this card? Like,
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it turns all your crappy top decks into, the perfect enabler.
Thraven
Inspector becomes a great top deck.
Your top deck, the Thraven Inspector, have a free card and a 3/3 that loots.
Yeah.
Like, jeez. Just... But yeah, like, I would love to see some sort of Gearhulk strategy come out of the woodworks. Like, you could play something with, like, Jund Gearhulks. Because, like, realistically, you just want to, like, dump them in your yard and ever after them. But, like, you want to play the green Gearhulk because I think it's one of the better ones. But at the same time, like, you want ever after. So, like, when you dump all these Gearhulks, you can, like, put 2 of them into play and just crush your opponent. But they all seem sweet. It's just, like... How do you fit all these sweet Gearhulks together? And it might just be you want to play, like, Abzan Gearhulks, but then you lose all of the, like, the discard outlets. So it's, like, really hard to get the right collection.
Yeah, well, they're great for Delirium. The green-black deck in third place basically throws a bunch of stuff in the yard, and then things like artifact vehicles count as different card types.
Yeah, artifact.
Gearhulk. Artifact creature. Artifact is just an artifact, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like Gearhulk counts for 2. Two types.
Gnarlwood Dryad is in the deck. Grim Flare is in the deck. Yeah. Traverse the Ovenwald. And then this is playing an Noxious Gearhulk and 2 Verdurous Gearhulk.
Yeah, I mean, I want it to be like super greedy and just like resurrect a couple of combustibles and just like, what, can I draw 6 or are you going to take a billion?
Like, yeah, Combustible freaks me out a little bit. That card, like, okay, so that's the one that's hated on the most, probably, because of, like...
But it's gotta be, like, great,
option,
right?
The Browbeat is tragically bad because of
option. Well, like, if your opponent's at 20, and you just put a Combustible Gearhulk in play, you're like, Combustible, choose. They're like, yeah, take it. And you're just like, all right, Emrakul Ulamog Gearhulk.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You know, there's a situation where they just straight up win off of one card, you know? And then, obviously they have to make that choice. But the alternative is they either draw 3 cards.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to draw an Emrakul and an Ulamog and something else, and I'm going to cast them and kill you. Like, that's going to happen. But yeah.
Okay, all right, let's hit Modern real quick.
All right, Modern. Do it.
Okay, so in Modern, we have a lot of Infect in the top.
So a lot
I'm seeing
of that
top
philosophy.
9 here. I think that's a typo. It's, it goes 1st through 7th and then 9th. But anyways, the first place was Infect. And obviously, yeah, Blossom Defense is the
so it may not be here. It may not be a mistake. It may be that, like, the 8th place guy didn't sign a waiver, so they can't publish his stuff.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Okay, anyways, Blossoming Defense. Again, that's one green mana for an instant. Target creature gets +2/+2 and gains hexproof. Obviously, it's kind of like an upgraded Vines of the Vastwood, yet we're still going to run four Vines of the Vastwood. So now we've got seven effects that do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it pushes out some number of mutagenic growth, I think is the slot it should probably be taking.
Is that it? Okay, oh, yeah, there's all four mutagenic growth in here. I don't know what's really been cut.
I have no clue what they cut, yeah.
Did they play that, they ever play that spell that was like, it had a Phyrexian mana and basically gave a creature protection from creatures and artifacts or something like that?
They did, yes.
So I don't see that in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, I mean, that's in the deck.
Probably better than...
Yeah.
Whatever it's called, yeah.
Okay. He's got Brad Carpenter won the event. He's got three of them in there. Let's look down here. Actually, check out the what is it? Not the second one. There's another red deck in here. The second place deck is Breach. Is red green Breach, which seems to be great.
Yeah.
There it is. Fourth place, blue red Storm. Okay, so check this out. Looks like a typical Storm deck. But then take a look at the sideboard. We've got two Platinum Empyrean and four Madcap Experiment. Which is that Chapin was going like absolutely bonkers about.
I dig it. Like, I think
in a deck like this, this is a perfect home for it, though. I mean, there are situations where you play this and the opponent has no answer to that. If you luck stack game one and you just win out with your Storm combo, game two, you toss in these six cards.
They board all their removal, and then, you know, you board in your Platinum Empyrean, and then you make a Platinum Empyrean on turn two or something like that.
Yeah, you can do a turn two with the Paratic Rituals.
Yeah, it's ritual, Madcap Experiment. Mega 8/8, go.
So he's actually got Gifts Ungiven in here too, which is kind of wacky. I like that. Yeah, four gifts.
I dig it. I can deal with that. So like one thing I would like to see in his deck is a 1/1 split
of
Platinum Empyrean and Platinum Angel.
Oh, why is that?
Because Platinum Empyrean doesn't beat Infect.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah. So Platinum Angel beats Infect until they kill it.
Flying is probably relevant too. Plus, look at how many fetch lands he's playing in this deck. Is that nuts? You can't fetch when you have Platinum Empyrean in play.
Wait, you can't fetch when you have Platinum Empyrean?
No, your life total can't change. You can't pay the luck.
That seems miserable. Wait, why does this guy have no... Wait, what? Yeah, okay, this dude's on a budget, clearly. He's on a budget, clearly. Because he has Flooded Strand, Polluted Delta, Water Pills. No Scalding Tarns.
I don't blame
you. I was like, where are the Scalding Tarns in this deck? I'm so confused.
You very rarely are going to fetch out that mountain anyway, but I guess, whatever, dude.
Mind blown.
Yeah. Anyways, there's that one. Grixis Delver made an appearance. I'm kind of excited about that. This is kind of one of my pet decks. Nothing too special in this one, but Collective Brutality is showing up in some sideboards, which I like to see. I think that's a pretty versatile sideboard card.
I can't explain to you how much I hate this deck.
Grixis Delver, really?
I hate it.
All right. Anyways, let's close out this modern segment. What do you think?
Not much from Kaladesh, but kind of what we expected, which was not much.
Yeah.
A lot of the impact came from Grim Flare and Eldritch Moon. So.
Well, I mean, there's tons of effects. Like Blossoming Defenses has a pretty good showing for.
I want that deck to die in a fire.
Yeah, I know. I'm really sick of it. You know, I'm going to go on a tangent right now. We're going to switch gears. I wanted to kind of catch up because it's been a while and just kind of talk about what we've been playing. And we kind of dove right into Standard because I got excited. But let me just say this. I've been playing a lot of Modern on Modo.
Me too.
And specifically, I've been really, really trying this Eldritch Evolution thing. Because I like toolbox decks are like kind of.
I've been kind of interested in playing like an Eldritch Evolution or Court of Calling style deck. Okay. But I haven't really
Let me put that to rest for you, because begrudgingly I will tell you that it is an awful it has an awful position in Modern right now.
Really?
Talk about this. Best case scenario, first of all, the deck is fine. There's nothing wrong with it in like any other format. But right now with Modern being how it is, like for a format where they've decided that they didn't want anyone to win on turn three or turn four, you have to win on turn three or turn four for your deck to stand a chance. Right? Like That's what it feels like to me, at least the modern metagame online does. So turn one, you play like a Birds or Noble Hierarch or something. In turn two, then you can Eldritch Evolution that Bird or Noble Hierarch into a 3-drop that basically is the Silver Bullet hate card for their deck. But I'm going to play reactively in modern right now. There's so many varied strategies of like combo and like just like linear aggro where where you have to like really have more answers than just one for their strategy, because inevitably they're going to draw enough like of the thing that they need to do what they want to do anyway, or they're going to draw the card that they're packing, you know, multiples up to deal with your Eidolon of Rhetoric, for example, if you're Storm.
Sure.
So things are bad. I mean, that's a pretty bad position to be in. You sacrificed your mana dork. You've lost an Eldritch Evolution. You're crossing your fingers. It's not going to get countered. And you get that hate card, and it just happens to be like maybe a Sin Collector or something to deal with their combo. That Sin Collector is not enough, right?
No, Sin Collector not great.
So the deck is cool. It's fun to play, but it's just reactive is not good in Modern right now. And just to be that
basically
guy
what you're,
to police
the basically what you're now. Telling me is I just want to Blood Moon people.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you want to just go Magus of the Moon, but even then, it's like, then they Lightning Bolt your Magus of the Moon. You know, there are problems with it. I don't think
I mean, like, I mean just blood moon people.
Oh, yeah, sure. I would agree with that.
Just like, so, like, do you want to play, like, Naya Blood Moon? Like, is that a thing that you want to do? Because, like, you get to be
Zoo?
Proactive. What?
Zoo?
No, like, I mean, kind of like Zoo. Like, Mana Dork into Blood Moon. Have basics, Tarmogoyf, Knight of the Reliquary, like shenanigans, Luxon Spider.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
no,
what the
no
best
path
deck
exile,
is. Honestly.
No path exile and just like bolt you, Helix you, beat down.
I think like, it makes me. I think if anything, like my experience with this has really pushed me to just want to be on like Infect or Affinity or like Suicide Zoo. I just want to like join it because there's really no fighting it. You know, you can't.
I just want to Blood Moon people. That's really what I want to do.
That's not enough, though, Daryl. That's not enough.
I don't know, man. Have you seen some of these Modern mana bases?
Yeah, you're dead. You're already dead before you're playing Blood Moon. Your fate has been sealed. If you're not doing anything else...
I mean, you're interacting with them, clearly. Like, I'm talking about, like, a Blue Moon variant or something similar.
Sure. I don't know, man. I honestly think Grixis Delver is a pretty good place to be because you can do the sideboard Blood Moon. You know?
I have to dust
and
off...
And you can also be proactive. What was that?
Might have to dust off the old Blue Moon deck.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Ancestral Visions plus Goblin Dark Dwellers is your finisher, pretty much.
Sure.
I mean, it's not unreasonable.
Yeah. Anyways, I was pretty amped to play. I'm gonna try PPTQ this weekend, and I was pretty amped to play the. I'm onto the Kiki Evolution deck. I've tried every single one.
Are they all bad?
I actually took Abzan to a PPTQ and I top eighted it, but lost in the first round a couple weeks ago. No, to Eldrazi of all things, which shouldn't be a terrible matchup for that deck, but
it seems like you just got lucky there. I think that matchup is
50-50. But yeah, I was undefeated in the Swiss that tournament. It was
nice.
Like five rounds. I played all five of them because I played someone in the fifth round that like was just on the edge of breakers or something, and we're like, yeah, well, I might as well just play for fun or something.
Ooh, a little rough. But yeah, no, I've been playing a bunch of weird decks on Modo lately. I spent like a week and a half playing blue-white do-nothing.
Yeah.
And I like did no worse than 3-2-ing a league, and I played like two leagues a day for like a week.
Nice.
And this deck is a pile of just how much nothing would you really like to do is basically what this deck asks you.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Is that positioned pretty well, that like blue-white style control? You're on to the Geist version, right?
No.
Oh, no, okay.
Yeah, here, I'll show you this and you can take a screenshot of it.
All right,
I am on to a very, very slow, grindy blue-white control deck. Like, I'm going to make you wish that your unborn children didn't have to deal with this.
Okay.
It's basically like you have your like white removal and like Path, Supreme Verdict, Condemn, Blessed Alliance, Detention Sphere. And then like you use the blue spells just like all four Snapcaster and then like Negate, Deprive, Dissolve, Cryptic Command, Logic Knot as counter spells, and then like cards that accrue you card advantage while also interacting with your opponent in some way, except for Jace Bellerin, which is like draw some cards. But like Crucible Worlds, Jace Architect of Thought, Gideon, Tamiyo, Elspeth, Secure the Wastes, like make a bunch of wands and trade with creatures, and then like using Sphinx's Revelation as your finisher.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It does the most nothing. Like, the quite literal, the most nothing.
You just have Celestial Colonnade in there, right?
You have five Planeswalkers. You have Jace, Gideon, Tamiel, Elspeth, and other baby Jace. So, like,
yeah, I mean,
small Jace.
Do you have the full four Celestial Colonnade? I think that's enough of a win condition for it to be a control deck. That just
four Celestial.
Yeah,
well, realistically, you win most of your games with a Tamiel emblem.
Oh yeah, okay.
Because you make a Tamiel emblem, and then you're like, all right, I have a Tamiel emblem. What are you playing? You're playing creatures. I have a Path to Exile. I'm gonna path your guy. All right, I'll pick it up. I'll pick it up.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's move on a little. We're this is a good transition though here. The next topic on our docket here is MTGO Treasure Chest. So we're talking about your deck in Modo, right?
I hate it. Go ahead.
You hate it? All right. I think that we have to kind of see how it all plays out. But here's how this goes here.
Let's introduce it to me before I go off on my hate it.
Hang on. Let me pause for a second and reboot this call because you're getting a little fuzzy. All right, so MTGO Treasure Chest. Daryl, you want to explain this one?
Sure. So basically, Wizards has said the current state of our dailies and leagues, etc. We don't like their payouts. We wanted to do something kind of cool for all the players. So instead of paying out the way that they currently do, they've invented this Treasure Chest system, which I hate, but I will read the update here. So basically what it is that when you play Modo and you were to, say, 5-0 Elite, right now you get 120 play points and, like, up two packs. If this is, like, just a friendly league, just, like, 5-0, you get 120 play points, two packs, and some QPs, and that's all well and good. Well, now you get, like, 80 play points, a pack, and, like, six treasure chests. And so what the treasure chests are is that they are just, they have two common or uncommon standard legal cards and a modern set rare or mythic.
Yeah.
Or a card off of the curated list. So those are legacy cards or vintage cards that are on this list.
Or modern.
So there's a list of like 600. It says modern set rare mythic or curated card. The curated cards specifically are legacy standard. Staples, vintage staples.
Okay, all right.
Modern set rare mythics are modern legal. Like, Black Lotus is a curated card on Modo. So it's going to be like, that's a vintage card, but it's something you can get. So each of your treasure chests has a curated or mythic or rare from modern, and two commons or uncommons. One in every 4.5 treasure chests takes one of the commons out and puts in another curated card. I was going to call them all curated cards.
Now, hang on a second. Let me clarify that. It says 1 in 4.5 treasure chests will have one standard legal common or uncommon replaced with a curated card or a modern set rare mythic. So it's not even guaranteed that 1 in 4 are going to be curated. 1 in 4 is going to be a rare, which could be of equal value, 0.05 cents.
Sure. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's both.
You know what I'm saying?
This is miserably much worse than it was.
Yes, yeah, I would agree.
Yeah,
but,
this is
how often it's going to be one or the other, though. It just says 1 in 4.5 will have the rare or the curated card, but it doesn't say that it's like 50% curated, 50% rare, which would be great. That would be fine.
So let's say 1 in 4.5 give you two of those rare spots. I'm just going to call them commons and rares for the sake of discussion. One in every 4.5 treasure chest gives you two rares instead of one. One in every 250 treasure chest, basically. It says 239. I'm going to round it to 250. One in every 250 gives you three rares. So commons come up twice, 2.5 times as often as uncommons. And then modern set mythics or rares appear as if they were from those sets. And then the curated cards have multiple versions that appear relative to the others. And then the frequency at which a curated card appears relative to the others is also curated by Magic R&D. So basically, Magic R&D said, this is how often, this is the list of curated cards, and this is how often they should show up We don't have the curated cards like percentages yet. That hasn't been leaked, but those include Zendikar Expeditions, Kaladesh Inventions, and a list of like 600 cards.
It's a lot of stuff that is valuable to constructed players of all types. Like, there's Chittering Rats on this list. You know, like, that's a good pauper card, right? So, like, if you want a pauper league, you could get a Chittering Rats. But you could also win a pauper league and get, like, a Chromatic Star, which is obviously a modern player. This is on the curated list.
Yeah, or you could win a modern league and get a Black Lotus.
Right, so it, like...
You know, like,
I almost maybe they're not saying this, but maybe the league that you win does kind of inform the curated card you get. I don't know. Probably not.
I hope it
makes sense, right?
It would be really cool to win a pauper league and get a Black Lotus, because a Black Lotus is like 230 ticks or something, or like 130 ticks or something. Like,
sure. Well, how much is like Chittering Rats is a card that means absolutely nothing to like a modern Legacy player, but it's probably worth like a few bucks to a pauper player, right?
Let me check.
All right, yeah, let's look up Card Hoarder.
I'm looking at MTGO Triggers.
Oh, no, it's only 57 cents on Card Hoarder.
Yeah.
So never mind that. But there's some cheap stuff, but for the most part, like, this is a pretty good list. Like, we're looking at a lot of good playables.
Like, if they give you a VMA Black Lotus, like, VMA Black Lotus is, like, $100. So it's 100 ticks.
Sure. Off the top here, the first three are worth some money. Abrupt Decay is, like, a $4 card on Modo. Academy Reactor, I don't know what that's worth on Modo. Probably not much of anything. Yeah. Academy Ruins. A couple bucks, you know, like, the problem with Moto is that the prices are so sporadic, you know?
Academy Rector is
$7. Oh, it is $7, okay.
Academy Ruins is $2. Really, the big card that everyone's going to want to get is Rashad Port. There's still 250 tickets. Okay. So, like, if you get a curated Rashad Port out of your treasure chest, you hit the lotto. So you have a 1 in 600 chance, which is probably, like, way worse than that, because Rashad Port's probably at, like, 0.05%. to hit a Rashad Port, and if you hit a Rashad Port, you won the curated lotto. So
yeah,
I hate it.
It really is the curated lotto.
I don't like
it. You only get the treasure chest for 5-0s, or do you get it for 4-1s?
I'm getting ready to read the new structure.
Okay.
So say we play in a friendly construct league. So friendly modern league right now, I kind of explained the play point payout. So they took all the packs from friendly and modern leagues. And now it's, if you win a friendly modern league, you don't even get to double up and say, like, you get 120 play points. So you can, like, win two, go 5-0 in two of them and, like, get a rebuy on the next modern league for free. It's just 80 play points and then 8 treasure chests.
Huh.
So, like, it kind of forced you not to want to play modern friendly leagues.
Yeah, apparently not.
Because there's no upside to, like, you used to be able to just go infinite by, like, 4-1-ing, getting 120 play points, and being able to, like, if you go 2-3 the next one, you get 40 play points and get to play your next mark. So, like, now you just can't even do that. It's miserable. Like,
and even then, you know, the tournaments are structured so that they're, like, bleeding money out of the economy. You know, they're absorbing some cash every time you play. Like, for example, you play a queue, right? You pay 20 bucks – or 20 bucks. You pay 20 tickets.
Play points.
Thank you. God, there's so much different currency in Magic Online. 20 play points, which is the equivalent of $2, right? You win the queue, you get 30 play points, which is the equivalent of $3. You've made a dollar for yourself. If you lose, you've spent 20 and you get 5 back, you lose 15. So Wizards is giving the winner 10 points and taking 15 out of the entry fee, right? So, like, eventually, like, not everyone can go infinite. You know, less than half of people can by that model. So now it's even worse for that. And there's even more randomness thrown in, because you get your treasure chest, you open your treasure chest out. There's a chance that you're going to open a card that you can cash in, you can trade in for tickets. But there's an even bigger chance that you're going to get something that's totally valueless. And even something on the curated list could be worth nothing to you. You know, like, you come out with 50 cents as opposed to having, you know, whatever, 20 extra play points, 40 extra play points that you would have gotten, you know?
Yeah. So it's so like set. And they've moved the quality points. So, like, you can't get QPs and qualify for the box by playing friendly modern leagues anymore, or friendly constructed leagues. You have to play competitive leagues to get QPs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's not such a big deal. I think that's kind of So which one's exactly lost it? The vintage cube still gives QPs, I thought.
The friendly leagues don't give QPs. That's a big deal to me because I've earned like I've earned 25 QPs just by like randomly 4-1 in modern leagues and 5-0 in modern leagues. So not being able to have those and be like, oh, I guess I can't try and like grind these and play in the mocks unless I just go on an extreme heater and in competitive ones. That's negative. That's very negative as a player.
Right, it's high risk to play those competitive leagues.
Yeah,
you know it sucks that this takes the I guess Daryl, when I first put this in the show notes, I didn't realize that there is really a hack to the play points that you win from these events. I thought this was an additional thing that they threw in.
No, they changed the play points.
With digital product, it seems to me that they can just do as much of that as they want, right? Because it doesn't exist. It's just a freaking code, you know?
Yeah.
So, with that, if that were the case, you know, it would be nice for them to say, hey, you know, like, we really support this environment, you know, as a place for players to play Magic, right? Like, there are plenty of people that only play online, like, pretty much myself. I don't play in paper very often anymore because I don't have the time to go to the shops.
Yeah. But
I feel like we're constantly getting shafted here because the environment is getting worse and worse, and the cost to play it is getting more and more with like little incentive to do it other than the fact that this is what we have to do. It's like we're kind of picking the lesser of evils because in some places this is the alternative to driving an hour and a half to your local game store or like giving up your time on a Friday night.
Yep.
So,
for me, once a month I can't go play Magic because I'm on call. Like I'm on call tonight. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit here on Moto. I'm going to play a league. And when I get done playing that league, if I get a phone call during the league and say, hey, you have to do this thing for the hospital, then I can, like, stop playing my game, grab my hospital laptop, do the thing, and, like, half pay attention to a game of Magic and try and finish it instead of having to drop from the tournament or bring my work laptop to, like, an event that I'm trying to relax at. Like, it's much, much better for me.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, like, that sort of thing just, like, disincentivizing me from playing, you know, competitive or like non-competitive leagues because like you've taken my extra play points away so that I can continue doing it to give me these crappy treasure chests. Like, I don't want treasure chests. I just want points. I just want to be able to like sit and play Magic forever. Like, that's it. That's all I want. Like,
yeah, it's certainly not like they're not making enough money on the program. You know, like there's relatively low overhead for them, you know, given that this is the idea has been designed.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, obviously there are costs to running the servers and hiring the programmers. But with the amount of revenue that they've got to be generating through Magic Online, it's insane that like they would find the need to increase that. You know, like I feel like if anything, like the players were on the short end of the stick to begin with, and there should be more incentive given to playing these leagues. And now it's kind of disguised as that when it's really not. You know, it's really this is a way for us to spend more money.
I found. Let me see if I can Google it real quick. Because I found this at work today and I read it. There was a really good article. I think it was on MTG Goldfish. This might actually be it. Nope, that's not it. There was a really good article that analyzed like treasure chests and like the concept of like what treasure chests are getting valued at based on the prize support that was in the leagues originally. Uh-huh. And then is this it? Yeah, it is. All right, sweet. I think I found it. Treasure chests. Nope, never mind. This isn't what I was looking for. But like it analyzed it and said, you know, based on what you're seeing in a current like league, friendly league, you know, two packs is, you know, worth three tickets apiece. 120 play points is basically 12 tickets. So they're taking four tickets from you plus six tickets from you and giving you eight treasure chests. So they're taking 10 tickets away from you and giving you eight treasure chests. So they're basically saying, you know, treasure chest is worth, you know, 1.5 tickets. Well, you're not always going to open a treasure chest and get 1.5 tickets worth of stuff out of it.
Yeah, that remains to be seen for sure.
Like, I mean, especially with the way that the announcement is worded, you're not going to get one and a half tickets worth of stuff out of a treasure chest. So because of that, like, you're disincentivizing me from playing, you know, you're disincentivizing me from playing by affecting my economy by, like, taking away, like, my economy in this case is I just want to win play points. I just want to win play points so that I can keep playing Magic. I don't want to, like, acquire, like, a bunch of tickets and try and get cards because, like, I have most of the cards already from when I, you know, invested originally that I just have all the cards for the decks I want to play. So, like, occasionally I'll spend, like, 10 or 15 bucks to buy cards, and that's not a big deal, but I don't want to have to invest in a bunch of tickets because I had a bad run of, like, going 2-3 in competitive leagues forever. Because that's the only place I can get boosters or QPs or a worthwhile turnaround on my play points. Like,
right.
4-1 competitive league to get, like, to be able to go infinite, you have to 4-1 competitive leagues, which, I mean, are much harder and, like, much more stressful playing them than it is to just try and 4-1 regular old friendly leagues. So, I mean, I am very, very unhappy with this, but, I mean, I have to vote. At this point, it's, you know, if you're that unhappy with it, I have to vote with my wallet and get rid of my collection and not play Magic online.
Yeah. I think that's really going to be hard to come to terms with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's very hard. Like, I, you know, saying it out loud, it's like, you know, I have money and time invested in this. Like, you know, is it time to just cut my losses and move on? Because, like, I'm being disincentivized now by Wizards to continue playing.
Sure. And we say that all the time, you know, but no one actually does it because we're hopelessly,
okay.
You know, like, they can do that. This is why they can do that, you know. All right. Anyways, let's move on because, you know, we're not actually accomplishing anything by having this conversation other than spreading awareness for the crap that this is.
Yeah.
But hopefully there will be enough people bitching about this that something will be done. I don't know. Maybe not. You know, that sort of thing shows weakness, right? They can't actually go back on something because we bitch, because then that's what we do. Anyway.
So, like, this Puka trade thing is actually the perfect way to...
This is a great segue.
I don't understand Puka trade as much as the next person, but, like, the concept is we're trying to scale back the Puka trade economy and make Puka trade points worth some amount more than they already are.
All right, wait, let me properly introduce this.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Please,
you know more about Puka trade than I
do. So please do. Please introduce.
Okay. All right, I'm a Puka Trade player, or Puka Trade user, I should say, and I'm sure everyone knows what Puka Trade is at this point. Started out with a paper, paper trading system based on points. Now, when this first came out, I honestly was a little bit skeptical of the system because every time you make a new account, you get something like 300 points, which is the equivalent of $3, right? It's basically the same rate as, you know, like a dollar bill to Magic
Sure.
Online tickets or whatever. But now it's more like 100 Puka points is equal to like 60 cents, you know, because the economy is so effed up. So eventually after Puka gave away so many points to users for, you know, making new accounts, for doing things like sharing their site on the Facebook, for, you know, basically you can go on their website and you can buy Puka points straight up for cash. There is no gold in Fort Knox to represent the money that they're just creating and printing for people, you know, and this is like a hypothetical economy that they're making.
Yeah,
so
they
tanked it. It's bad. It's really bad. Puka Trade users, you go online right now, I don't know what the average is that a user has sitting around in terms of Puka points, but you've got like people with want lists of like, you know, like that span like 3 or 4 pages and they're not receiving cards because no one's willing to send cards. When the Future site came out, they introduced Magic Online trading to it, and I thought things would get better because all of a sudden, you know, there are many more cards to be sent. There's a whole new untapped economy that we can kind of – or untapped market we can kind of delve into.
Sure. Same thing.
And basically the new site was launched with all sorts of bugs and problems. People are bitching about the format of it. It's a really flashy-looking format. It's nothing like what people were used to, and that was kind of the problem, right? So they introduced all these things at once, and, like, everything looks different. Things are in different places, you know, and then all of a sudden now we can use this to trade for Magic Online cards, which is great. I'm so glad that we can because I'd like to, you know, offload some paper cards for Moto cards on occasion. But when I did that, I did offload a bunch of cards. I traded for about $40 to $50 worth of Puka points. Those points just sat in my account. I could not get rid of them for the life of me. I've changed my name to, you know, plus 20% bounty for any incoming trades. That's what you have to do now. And basically what happens is you offload a bunch of cards that are valued, and the only thing you can really get in incoming trades is, you know, like I'm looking at my received list here. I got something that was worth 48 points. That's the equivalent of 50 cents. That was, and that's a high one, by the way. I've got my most recent trades, 23 cents, $1.40, 3 cents. You know, like all these, like basically you're trading down automatically with everything you do. And nothing really, you know, staples, you cannot get a staple in any constructed format because people are just not willing to trade those on here right now. So the problem is Puka has pledged, based on feedback from a survey they sent out, they found out that people were pissed about the economy being effed up, right? They made a big mistake. So they have pledged to take points out of the economy, and they're coming up with a few ways to do that. And so their goal here is to offer things like Puka Shield, which is basically trade insurance, or profile customization for points. Like you pay points to be able to change your image on your profile or something along those lines. So that's working. That's getting points out of the economy. Most recently, what they are doing is a sweepstakes. And so the curator of the site, the owner of the site, the founder of the site, I should say, Eric Freitag, has offered up his very own dual land. It's whatever the green blue one is, as a sweepstakes. So you can buy tickets into the sweepstakes for 100 points each. But there is a dual land going up for all of the thousands and thousands of users of Puka Trade to bid on. So now you can just kind of like flush 100 tickets down the drain at one at a time, you know, for your very limited chance to win this. But apparently it's working. Sure. It seems kind of awful that this is what we've come to, but really there is no other solution than this, you know, to really get the points out of the market. They're, you know, making personal sacrifices to do that. I get that they're a small company, right? But they do have a lot of users. People have invested a lot into their Kickstarter to get them going. Like, they've got to have some capital to, like, actually, like, you know, invest in, like, putting these prizes up for the sweepstakes or actually sending cards to kind of stimulate their economy. I don't know what the right solution is, but the one that they've come up with seems a little bit dissatisfying for me as a user.
So you said that 500 points per month to show boundaries. What is that?
Oh, yeah. So here's the other one. All right. So this is another option that they've come up with. So basically with the economy being all backed up and people having to put up the bounties to actually get incoming trades, you know, for example, what you'd have to do is change your name to like plus 40% bounty for, you know, a certain card. And then people are more incentivized to actually send you that card. The way that worked, it was kind of like this backdoor exchange of points. Like, you actually have to have a silver membership in order to be able to send points in the first place. And once the trade was complete, then you're expected to just, you know, out of the understanding that you were going to send those in the first place, just ship over, you know, points to the person that sent you the card, right? So unofficially, you know, supported by Puka Trade, I think they realized it was something you had to do, right? And so they would actually settle those disputes in when you opened a case with someone. Yet there is no way to officially send points without having a silver membership, which, you know, typically would be used to just give a gift to someone. So now what they're doing then is they're offering this option here. This is another way to get points out of the market. For 500 points a month, you can add a bounty to your name where, you know, it's not your name, but there's a bounty on your profile for a certain card. So not only do you have to pay a premium on the card you'd like to receive, you have to pay 500 points just to get the opportunity to do that.
You have to pay $5? Jeez.
$5 a month, yeah. So that's in addition to your, like, I mean, that's an alternative to a silver membership or in addition to a silver membership, which is already $5 a month.
Sure.
So it is what it is. I don't think that's to say that you can't continue to do, you know, the bounties by name, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the company no longer supports that style of trading, right? Like, they're not going to settle disputes anymore. They're going to say, hey, well, you should use, you know, our official bounty system, which costs some money.
Yeah, it seems like a disaster.
So it's just like compounded like crap. Like, basically, you know, the currency is devalued, right? So you're already paying more than what the cards are worth. And then on top of that, you're paying a bounty. So you're already paying more and more than what the cards are worth. And yeah. Now you've got to pay 500 points to actually have like a legit bounty set up. So you're paying more and more and more than what the cards are worth.
This seems like a disaster.
So basically, a lot of people are trying to get out as fast as possible. They're encouraging others to drop out of the system. Unfortunately, that's not how this is going to get better, right? Like, I mean, if you're actually invested in like making this like a reasonable trading system, which it should be, and I think it can be, I think we've actually got to encourage people to participate in Pookie Trade. So all of this, you know, this wallowing about like how awful the system is and how crappy the economy is, like, it's not doing any good to publicly just complain about Pookie Trade, because then people are less likely to invest in, you know, they're no longer interested in participating in it. They're no longer comfortable sending cards because they think that their values, their points are going to go nowhere.
Yeah, it's weird.
Which, unfortunately, it's true that they are, you know, but...
This is weird. This is super strange.
And it's just a series of bad decisions, you know? I think that they really didn't think through the whole, like, effect on this little economy that they've created and, you know, just willy-nilly giving up points. Like, there was no long-term, you know, sustainability model in place where they're like, you know, like, in the future, like, this will be okay. You know, like, I think it's pretty easy to see that if, you know, we just are continually printing money, like... Things are going to go bad at some point. Like, eventually, we're going to have some major inflation going on. It's happened. So that's Pookie Trade in a nutshell.
So it sounds like the two economies are running into the same problem, and nobody's figured out how to fix it, which is strange because magic is inhabited by all these very logical and intelligent humans, and you would think that somebody would be able to figure out how to fix it.
But is that true? Is that a problem that Moto is having? Are they... Like, I don't think that the problem is that people have a bunch of tickets and they have nothing to spend them on. I think it's quite the opposite, you know?
Well, I mean, Moto is disincentivizing people from acquiring tickets. So, like, you acquire these tickets, but you're instantly devaluing. You're inputting a dollar, but then you're devaluing not the ticket currency, but how to utilize the ticket currency in the game. You're devaluing, you've instantly devalued it by creating the trade interest concept. Uh-huh. Like, the play point concept was the first problem, was that, like, by giving us play points, you devalued the ticket, or you tried to increase the value of the ticket because you decreased the value of, like, the amount of packs going out, because the market used to be flooded before play points, the market was flooded with packs. Because when you 5-0'd a constructed daily, you'd get, like, 15 packs. So packs were like $1.50, $2.
Okay.
Because did you tank the value? Because, like, you know, 128 people or something, you know, play in a daily and, you know, 16 of them go undefeated. You just introduced, you know, what is that, 13, so like just 15 times 15 is 225 packs into the economy. So you just, you're tanking the price of pack if everyone can get packs. So, like, that was a problem. So they invented play points, which I at first was kind of very against, but, like, came around to, I just kind of want to play Magic. I don't have to, like, deal with selling packs of ticks and, like, the crappy return on packs. So play points were actually a very welcome change once I started to accrue them and figure out how they worked. But these treasure chests feel like all downside. Like, sure, you could spike it and open a treasure chest with, like, a Rashad Port and a Black Lotus and be like, boom, 350 tickets, baby! Hit me! But would you rather have, like, you know, 1 in 4.5, and then, like, you know, you happen to hit spike the curated side, which is probably like 30% to 70%.
Yeah,
I mean, and then you spike the 0.0001 for Black Lotus and the 0.0001 on the 30% side for a Schadenfort.
Right.
So, you know, like, even if millions and millions of treasure chests are open, like, eventually that'll happen. But, you know, 0.001 squared times 0.3 squared is the odds that you yourself opened that treasure chest. And that's, it's just so minuscule that, like, you know, so we're trying to basically spike it to get tickets.
So, I get you, Daryl. I think we've sufficiently talked about why the treasure chest is not ideal. I mean,
but it's the same thing. Like, you're inflating the value of the ticket.
Yeah.
By deflating the end user's value of the ticket.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It seems like they're both in the same spot. They're trying to inflate the value of Pookie points, by deflating the user's purchasing power, Puka points. And that's not how you regulate economy. So, like, there's no incentive.
Is this now? Is the treasure chest system like in play right now? I haven't.
It will be in play like on the next downtime.
Okay, it will be. Okay, yeah. So now like cash in right now, right?
Basically.
Play your events, get your QPs while you can. I mean, that's another update that we didn't really get a chance to talk about, but the changes in those QPs. I mean, there are going to be more online tournaments going on. That's a plus side to this thing. I know we didn't get to talk about the positives here, but there's more to that news than just the treasure chest. So, you know, look it up on your own time, I guess.
Sure.
The last thing I want to talk about today was Frontier Magic, but I think I want to put it on hold for next week because of time. But I will introduce it.
It does look kind of sweet. Yeah.
The idea here is this is a new format and people have some very mixed feelings on a new format. Why do we need a new format? Blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you right now, I'm like very much in favor of this and it kind of excites me about it. But let me just say this. Frontier Magic is strictly in Japan right now in the card shops, like the, what's the name of Saito's shop in Japan?
I can't say
Tokyo. Hare Ruya or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where it's done. But there's a list of about 12 shops in Tokyo, I think, that are running a tournament on this. And it's happening on the 30th. So they're giving people a good like month or so to build decks. But it's a new format, basically a non-rotating format that starts with M15, which it seems like a weird spot. But if you think about it, that's when the new border was introduced with the black bottom.
Yeah, with the dot. With the
dot, yeah. So same idea as Modern. Modern, you know, was the new border starting in 8th edition. So M15 is the beginning of this format. So that includes Khans, Origins, Battle for Zendikar, Shadows, Kaladesh, and M15. Currently pretty close to our current standard, but obviously, you know, we're back to having fetch lands. So I just made a quick list here to start to kind of spark your ideas of this because I kind of want to think about what you could build in Frontier and what could be, you know, the most oppressive deck in this format down the road here if this catches on. Because I certainly want to get in at the ground level, don't you? If this is something that's going to happen, I want to get in at the ground level where it's not cheap. There are plenty of standard good cards that rotate and just, like, lose their value. I think this could make those, you know, valuable again. So anyways, the land cycles that you have access to in this one is kind of interesting. So you've got M15 and Origins give you pain lands, which are enemy colored.
You got the Kaladesh.
And you've got the Kaladesh fast lands that give you enemy colored pain lands. And that's really your best options for enemy lands.
So you
fast
have the
lands and pain lands.
You have the fetches because you have Khans.
Now hang on, because we're talking ally now. So ally colors are much more appealing. You've
so
got
you
your Khans
fetches.
You've got your Khans or your battle lands from Battle for Zendikar.
Yep.
And then the Czech lands.
Wait, is like Glacial Fortress? I don't think Glacial Fortress.
No, Czech lands. Sorry, that's not the right word. I'm talking about like the port town and stuff.
Oh, okay. The Shadows lands.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I guess
I miswrote that
when
one.
When you said Czech lands, I'm like, wait, we get Glacial Fortress?
Yeah.
Oh,
so obviously two-colored ally decks are like, you know, extremely consistent in terms of mana. But you kind of have to think about the overlapping colors with when you have three colors and how you can benefit from that with the Khans, fetches, and battle lands combination.
Enemy-colored creature lands. So you get like Shambling Vent.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. I didn't consider those.
So like you're looking at if you want to play like an Esper deck, you have, you know, Shambling Vent, 8 fetches, you know, 4 battle lands. How many basics do you play? You have the Scar, the Kaladesh white black fast land, the white black pain land, and you probably want to play basics if you're playing ally color check lands, so or like ally color battle lands. And then if you're gonna play Port Town and whatever the blue black one's called, how many basic land types do you have? Probably like 10 or 11. Like,
yeah. So the mana base is weird. It's like super like not balanced, you know, in terms of colors, and I think that's kind of what makes it interesting. So like we had Modern before where we didn't have the Khans fetches at all, and we were just dealing with the Zendikar fetches,
and
right?
Enemy fetches.
So there's that awful balance. And once those finally came into play, it was like, you know, any wedge combination is playable. In fact, like 5 color decks are quite playable. But I don't know what that's going to look like here, and it kind of makes the Battlelands look a lot better, right? Like. Like that's the card you would be fetching for, right? Because they have the basic land types,
yeah.
And there's really no other option in this format. So, It's certainly interesting. There's no banned list, so Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise are still allowed. You know, notable players in this, obviously those two cards, but also, like, Siege Rhino's back, right? Collected Company is a possibility. All the Eldrazi are playable because we've got Pain Lands, and we've got plenty of the Eldrazi lands.
Court of Calling?
Court of Calling is not... Oh, yeah, that's M15. Yeah.
M15?
Yeah, so you've got Cord and Coco. I did it. Which is pretty interesting, isn't it?
I did it. So let's combo, boys.
Yeah.
We get to play Rally the El Ancestors. We get to do that again.
Yeah, Rally the Ancestors. And then it's also notable that there is no, like, decent burn. Like, in a format that kind of mirrors, like, a baby modern. Like, we don't have a Lightning Bolt in this format. You know, we don't really have any, like, consistent counter spells. We have decent, like, straight up, like, removal, like, unconditional removal and, like Ruinous Path and things of that nature. But as far as, like, burn goes...
You also don't have these Lightning Strike oppressive tops. Like, you have one oppressive combo, which is going to be whatever collected company, like whatever collected company, Court of Calling, Rally the Ancestors garbage is available.
Well, like,
that's going to be the oppressive combo deck. And then, like, after that,
Jeskai Ascendancy, like, is that a possibility? I mean, we've got Jeskai Ascendancy. I don't know what you can do with that.
You could play it, but, like, there's not enough good cantrips to, like, keep it going.
Sure.
It could be just like Jeskai Ascendancy, a token strategy, but, like, but, like, the super oppressive combo deck is Rally.
Yeah, I like that. So. I think it's going to be fun. I mean, like, not even, like, infinite combo. Like, Rally's not an infinite combo. I don't think there's any access to an infinite combo. Because at least in the time that since M15, oh God, it's only been a year, right, since M15 was printed.
Yeah.
Like, Wizards is pretty carefully tiptoed around degenerate combo cards, you know, like with the exception of Jeskai Ascendancy being, like, sort of an outlier there.
Yeah.
But this is a format where you're probably going to have, like, it's just going to be a value format, right? Which I love. I want so badly for Modern to be that, but it's just...
Who can see Trino and Kolaghan fan themselves into the ground fast enough?
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, I don't want to talk too much about this. I just kind of want to get you excited about it. We can talk next week, but let's plan on spending some time on Frontier Magic and sort of pros and cons and also doing a little brewing. You want to?
Are we through it? Yeah.
Yeah, let's brew. Let's have a showdown, too. You want to put this on Moto? We could play off, maybe do a couple of those each.
CKL plays, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. Cool, I like that.
That's the five matches?
Yeah, let's do this. Let's do one on... Build one deck for next week, and we'll have to get our match deck done before Monday.
I was about to say, are we doing, like, best of five matches? So, like, build three decks or just build one deck?
Should we do that? Maybe you should sample a bunch. I just am worried that I'm not going to have the cards for this right now. But
kind of like a Hearthstone thing was what I was looking at, like, best of five or just one.
Yeah.
The awkward part will be running into wanting to play cards in standard and having to spend infinite on them. So, like, one seems more viable.
Yeah. Yeah, let's start with one. We'll go from there. Maybe we can get three going and just kind of borrow cards from each other. Or maybe we can do it on Cockatrice or something. Yeah. I don't know. But we'll figure it out and we'll report back next week.
Yeah. we can do a CKL plays and just, like, put the video up. But, yeah, certainly. Sure. We can make that happen.
All right, nice. That's a good idea. I'm glad we had that conversation.
Cool.
Well, I think I'll probably leave that in, too, so...
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, there you have it. That was episode 54. Yeah. We'll see you next week, and I promise it won't be 3 months later.
Peace.
All right. Bye. You've just listened to another episode of Card Knock Life. We are proud to be a part of MTG Cast, and if you are interested in more, please visit us at cardknocklifepodcast.com or email us at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.